All right, so Joe Orlando's new book is Collecting Sports Legends, The Ultimate Hobby Guide. Congratulations, Joe. It's a very handsome book, and not to be your agent or anything here, but at the cover price of $34.95, it's also a great bargain.
Well, thank you very much for the kind words. We did put a lot of effort into it. It's not part of our core competency here. We're basically in PSA and PSA DNA. We authenticate and grade collectibles of various types, primarily sports, but you know, entertainment, political as well. But this book was something that we really wanted to do, and the idea came from one of our well-known dealers of sports memorabilia. He had asked a couple of years ago if I would consider putting together something that he could hand to a prospective client or a prospective collector, if we could at least develop some type of base guide to interest new people in collecting, and hopefully that's what we've done here.
Now, new people to collecting, you know, most people of my generation started collecting when they were kids. And, you know, baseball cards were a nickel a pack or even a penny a pack or a dime, and they came with the gum. You know all this. But this seems like a much more upscale clientele.
Well, it's interesting. When PSA first started, and it's very interesting for me because I was actually one of PSA's first customers many years ago. I've been here for 10 years, but PSA started nearly 18 years ago. And when PSA first started, it really was catering towards the high end. You know, if you had a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle, this was the place to send the card for grading and authentication. But as the concept of third-party grading and authentication started to penetrate the hobby, people realized that it really does have a place, not just for high-end or high-value vintage cards, but it has a place for modern cards, vintage cards of lesser value. It really does help in a variety of ways, and no matter if your budget is, you know, $100,000 or $10, there's something there's some value to having your items authenticated and graded.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by third party?
Well, third party, see, at PSA, what we do is we don't buy and sell anything. We strictly authenticate and grade. So when I say third party, we are a third party to the transaction in the hobby. So if you have a buyer and a seller, we have no financial interest in the sale of anything. People send us items for authentication and grading.
Okay. Well, when did you start working on this book?
I started working on this book about, I'd say, two and a half years ago.
So that came to press fairly quickly.
Yes.
How has recent economic challenges impacted on the industry?
Great question. Interestingly enough, it's had virtually no impact on the super ultra high-end collectibles. In our hobby, it's really gone towards high-end auctions. So there are a lot of auctions. Virtually every month, there's some high-end auction taking place out there. Of course, you also have daily auctions on places like eBay, for example. But the super high-end material has held up very, very well. And really, there's an argument to be said there that it hasn't affected it at all. If you check the prices realized for some of the recent auctions, for example, there was just the most recent, I would consider, major high-end auction just took place within about 10 days ago, and some record prices were had there, even in this economy, for super high-end material. There was a 1927 Yankees team sign photo, one of the finest examples that I've ever seen, certainly. It sold for just a hair under $100,000. I mean, that's not chump change, and that was a tremendous price for an item of that nature. And there are many, many prices that we could cite, you know, over the last few months. So on the high-end stuff, it has not affected it really much at all. Tangibles tend to hold up pretty well in situations like this. But I would say really where it's hurt the most, and it hasn't hurt much, but where it's hurt the most is sort of the, I would call it the meat and potatoes material. It's the sort of mid to lower level material. So, for example, if you had a 1960s Hank Aaron card that was, let's say, graded a PSA 8, a card that might be worth, you know, $200, $250, maybe right now that card is down, you know, 15-20%. It's not a lot. It's not down as much as my 401k is down, of course, But and unfortunately for a lot of people, our 401ks are down quite a bit. But overall, the news is pretty good. I think the thing about in particular sports collectibles is that this is what people do to escape that daily grind. It's a vice for people. And if you have that collector gene, I certainly have it. Some people call it a disease. I'll just call it a collector gene. But if you have that, it's something that you really enjoy doing. And maybe over the next year or so, until this economy sort of figures itself out here, maybe the spending will be down a little bit in the hobby, but this is still something that people enjoy doing. They don't give up their love for a particular team or a particular player just because the real estate market's down or just because the stock market's down. They may not be able to spend quite as much, but over time, and it has been proven, again, time and time again, even I can remember right after September 11th, there was a major auction that took place just 3 days after that horrific event. It set records left and right. And you're kind of wondering, why would people be paying attention to a baseball card and autograph auction 3 days after, the most horrific event I can remember, in my lifetime? And they still did. So tangibles, at least in this industry, have held up well during tough times.
Well, it's also a comfort thing. It's a nostalgic thing. It harkens back to a simpler time for a lot of these people. What do you have a profile of a collector? Like what the average collector, age-wise, financially, gender-wise? I'm assuming it's mostly a male group that does the collecting of these things.
It's certainly male dominated. There's no question about that. I do think you get a variety or a very diverse mix of primarily men, of course, but a diverse mix of collectors with different financial backgrounds. I mean, there are some people who are some of our top customers that are, very well-to-do. I mean, people that are worth in excess of $100 million. And then you have a lot of collectors who are operating on very modest budgets. So it's pretty diverse there. As far as age, that's a very interesting topic in and of itself. There's no doubt that collecting, like you said, if you grew up during the 50s or the 60s or the 70s, that was just part of the culture. Even for me, I'm 37 years old right now, and when I grew up, people collected baseball cards. All my friends traded cards when we were little. It was just something that you did as a child. Now, I see the younger generations today, kids growing up today, it's certainly not as popular as it once was. And, there are a lot of reasons for that, of course. The computers and video games have really, taken over. And I don't know if that's such a good thing, at least on the video game side, but they are just dominating the youth today. I mean, it seems like that's where a lot of their interest lies. But I'm very curious, and so are a lot of people, long term, what effect this will all have on younger generations of collectors. What I do see are people like myself who at some point during their life stopped collecting, but then found that love of collecting again later in life. Once their career settled down, they had a little more disposable income to spend on collecting. They kind of, they recaptured that feeling, and that's what I do see is people doing that.
Well, you talk about kids. There are two factors aside from the new sets of diversions for them. One is that there's so much out there now. When I was a kid, Topps was it. And in the 80s, you started having the Upper Deck and the Score and the Fleer and the Donruss.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 5 cents. But those were just simple major sets. And now you have all these little individual sets of like 70 cards, 100 cards. And they're not cheap. You get an allowance back in the 60s, if you had $1 a week, you could buy 20 packs of baseball cards. Now a pack goes anywhere from like $3 to $7 and upwards. So are these industries pricing the next set of loyal fan base out?
Well, you bring up a tremendous point, and I actually think the first point you made is even more that made more of an impact than the pricing. The fact that you mentioned that, you know, when you go look back to the 1980s, in the 1980s, that was the big boom in this industry. I mean, that was right in the, like, when I was growing up, I was a kid during that time, and I was right in the middle of all that, and I remember how unbelievably prevalent collecting, you know, of cards and sports memorabilia was in the 1980s. But the key was, and you had already mentioned it and made the point, there were certain sets. Like, for example, if you were collecting a rookie card of Cal Ripken Jr., Don Mattingly, Roger Clemens, you know, Dwight Gooden, any of the popular players from at that time, you know, in the 1980s, there were very few cards to collect. So what you had is you had all of that demand, all of that money being, you know, focused on a few issues. So if there were, let's say there were three major or four major Roger Clemens rookie cards, all of the hobby's money was focused on acquiring those basic cards. And then, like you pointed out, in the early 90s, all of a sudden you started to see more and more of these subsets popping out. And then it just became, I mean, I don't know what other word there is other than ridiculous, but then it just got to the point where, I mean, for example, if you wanted to collect today, and let's say LeBron James was one of your favorite players, you love basketball, you're a kid, and LeBron James is your idol. If I'm not a modern collector myself, I'm not a modern card guy, but my understanding is that there are somewhere well over 100 just rookie cards of LeBron James. That just makes it makes it very difficult for people to collect, whether you're a set collector or an individual player collector. There's just too much, and that's what made collecting fun. Again, whether you were collecting a set, a basic set, or cards, all the cards of your favorite player during the 70s, 60s, 80s, whatever decade it was, you could actually do it. And that's part of what makes collecting fun, is setting a goal and saying, I can do this. Today, you may have all the money in the world. I don't know if you can buy every Kobe Bryant card ever made. There are probably some that are one of ones, one of fives, one of, you know, the threes, one of tens. There's just too many of them. So I think that has had an even greater impact than the pricing issue.
So how do you decide which set or which company to collect?
In the modern era, I think the best thing to do is, here's the good news, on the computer, there are a lot of internet chat rooms for collectors, that sort of thing. I think collectors really decide for themselves. No matter what the manufacturers tell the collecting public, it's the collector that decides, okay, these are the cards that we feel are, you know, Peyton Manning's best rookies, or Kobe Bryant, or Albert Pujols, that sort of thing. So I think going on the internet, talking to other collectors is very important. And dealers can be great allies as well. Ask questions, and they'll sort of guide you. Okay, this is the Albert Pujols rookie. This is the Kobe Bryant rookie that everybody wants. Of course, you have there may be 50 others, but this is the one that people really seem to have the most interest in. So I would definitely ask questions. I'm not so sure if I were a kid. I'm not so sure I'd want to be a kid today collecting, because it's very difficult. And I hope, you know, listen, the manufacturers are a key part of this industry, so I want to make sure that, you know, I'm not coming across too critical, but at the same time, I hope they're listening, because the reason that the hobby succeeded in the 1980s was that they kept things basic. They kept things simple. And I think if the hobby gets back to the basics, it'll be a much more successful industry.
Are the kids now collecting for pleasure, or are they already looking at these things as investments?
Interesting. I mean, I think they do collect. I mean, I think if you, listen, the bottom line is if you're into collecting, I think that most people do it for the pleasure. Even the guys that have multi-million-dollar collections, I think one of the biggest misconceptions is, oh, they just want to do it for the money. They just, you know, it's just about ego. It's just about money. And that's simply not true. I've met many collectors in this hobby that have, you know, arguably the finest collections in the world, and they love it. I mean, yes, they have a lot of money, but they love what they do. Now, with kids, I think, unfortunately, there has been a little too much emphasis placed on the value of the cards. And I think, you know, again, it sort of ties into this whole chase card phenomenon that developed during the 1990s. I mean, then it's all about getting the chase cards, because the chase cards are worth more than the base cards. And what you see, and this is sort of a frightening visual for people in the hobby, but this is what I used to see, is that people would walk into stores, like what you would see a kid standing over a trash can, and he would open the pack of cards, and literally, he would just, as he's going through the deck, you know, of cards within the pack, he's just throwing them in the trash, and then he'd pull out, you know, the one that was worth more, you know. Then he would just go through another pack, and he's just, they're flying out of his hand into the trash can, and then he's pulling out another one. And that's not what collecting was about just a decade earlier. So I really think if there's going to be long-term success with the youth, I think they do need to get back to the basics, because the hobby has so much to offer. The internet can be such a great thing because of all the information that's out there. But the bottom line is, if the manufacturers do not get back to the basics, I think they're in trouble, and they already have been. I mean, you can read, you know, I'm sure you have read the reports. I mean, that market is down. I mean, tremendously. So I think they need to make a major change.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, Joe, thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Collecting Sports Legends, The Ultimate Hobby Guide. It's published by Zyrus Press. And Joe Orlando, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you for your time, Ron.
Okay.